in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 3rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's begin in Kampala, where twin brothers believe the young Ugandan boxers they train are destined for international success. Magume Davis Rakawinge filed this hard-hitting feature from Kampala, Uganda.
It is a good thing to be coached by an experienced coach, but it's even much better to be trained by two experienced boxing twin brothers, says Ugandan boxer John Katongole. The two twins train Katongole simultaneously at the local gym here in Kampala. Hussein Khalil, the 1982 Commonwealth gold medalist, dominated boxing in Uganda before changing alliance to Kenya and later joined paid ranks both in the United States and Europe. Khalil vividly remembers his journey and says not even the political instabilities at the time would hamper him to pursue his dream of becoming a boxing legend in East Africa.
I was a Ugandan champion in 1980. I became a light flyweight champion. By then, our president, he said he has banned all the sports for about a year. Yeah, there was the sports, this boxing could not go on until we get everything organized. Then the Kenyans say, no, why don't you come and join us? I joined a club called Kenya Breweries. I got there, and then I became, they are preparing for the Olympics in 1980, which was going to take place in Moscow, USSR. But unfortunately, Kenya had boycotted the Olympics. Then we had a tournament called the Kenya Golden Cup, the countries which boycotted the Olympics.
The tournament, that was in part sponsored by the great boxing legend Muhammad Ali, attracted hundreds of boxers from over 40 countries across the globe. Khalil won bronze and says that was a start to even more success locally and internationally for the years that followed.
Participated in the big tournaments like African Championship 3 times. I got two times, I boxed and I got gold medals in lightweight. I got two gold medals in 1980, 83 and 84. Then I went for the Commonwealth Games 1983. It was in Brisbane, Australia, where I got a gold medal in lightweight.
His success influenced his number one fan, his twin brother, Hassan Khalil, who was then a footballer.
That time I switched from football to boxing because it is individual sports. I switched to the boxing. If you push yourself, you can be a champion. I have about 174 fights since I started boxing. I had 174 fights. I lost only 4 fights. I won only 170 fights. And I pushed myself.
Along the way, the Khalil brothers say they learned different tactics that they decided to come and impact in the young generation when they retired from boxing in 1993.
1994, that's the time we started with very few boys. All the boys came and said, okay, we started. Let's try and see and produce some good boys. We were lucky in the finals, in the national championship, we took about three boys. Two of them got to the finals and one became a Ugandan champion. That was Michael Obin.
They started East Coast Boxing Gym located in Naguru, a Kampala suburb, that has since produced hundreds of boxers, many of who have won both national and international fights. Budding fighter John Katongole says he's assured he'll win medals because of the skills he gets from the two coaches.
When you move with champions, you become a champion mentally, physically, emotionally. Yeah. My coach is a Commonwealth medalist. My coach has a good record in amateur, and also he has produced a lot of champions. I am the national fly champion 2019, and it's because of East Coast Boxing Club.
The Khalil boxing coaches pride in what they do and say as twins, it is easy to motivate boxers.
Whenever I see a boxer, I tell him, how you jump, they feel proud. They feel well and good, and then it encourages them. He train him how to attack, but me, I train him how to defend himself.
The two twins say Uganda has many talented boxers. They believe one day their boxing club will produce boxers to dominate boxing nationally and internationally. For the Sunnyside of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Hello, listeners. This is Hussein Khalil from Uganda. I'm a gold medalist in Commonwealth Games 1982 in Brisbane, Australia. Listen to the Sunnyside of Sports on Voice of America.
Thanks, Coach. And thanks also to Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala for that boxing feature, which definitely packs some punch.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Miro Juma, the bronze medalist, Commonwealth 2018 Australia Gold Coast. Listen to the Sunnyside of Sports on A Voice of America.
Athletes around the world continue to protest last week's death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Floyd, an African-American man, was handcuffed and lying face down in the incident, which was seen all over the globe in viral videos. Floyd died after a white police officer pressed his knee into his neck for nearly 9 minutes. Players who scored in the German and Hungarian football leagues removed their jerseys to display undershirts with the words "Justice for George Floyd." Meanwhile, players for the English clubs Liverpool, Chelsea, and Newcastle dropped to one knee during practice in a clear gesture of support. In Auckland, New Zealand, Nigeria-born Israel Adesanya, the reigning Ultimate Fighting Championship middleweight champion, addressed a crowd of 4,000 people. He urged them to speak up for George Floyd and take peaceful action. Manchester United football star Paul Pogba wrote on his Instagram page, "I can't tolerate. I won't tolerate. We won't tolerate." Pogba has 41 million followers at his Instagram page. He also posted a photo of him looking to the sky with a clenched right fist. Jonas Bear Hoffman, the Secretary General of the Global Soccer Players Union, FIFPro, told the Associated Press, and I quote, "George Floyd's death hit a nerve in this very particular time, which I think made people all around the world reflect on the environment we live, not only in the United States, but in all kinds of places where there is a perpetuation of discrimination and inequality." The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Hall of Fame basketball player Wes Unseld, who died Tuesday at 74. Unseld is being described as the franchise foundation of what is now my favorite NBA team, the Washington Wizards. The rugged Unseld was originally drafted by the Baltimore Bullets in 1968. The team moved here to Washington and became the Washington Bullets. And in 1997, the team changed its name to the Washington Wizards. Wes Unseld was named the NBA's most valuable player during his rookie season and joined the late Wilt Chamberlain as the only two players in NBA history to accomplish that feat. Wes Unseld was known for his rebounding, bone-crunching picks, and unselfish play. The highlight of his career came in 1978 when Washington won its only NBA championship. Wes Unseld was named MVP of the NBA Finals that year, and after his playing days, he would continue working for Washington as head coach and general manager. Hall of Fame basketball player Wes Unseld, dead at the age of 74.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Micho Sredovic, coach of Zambia national football team Chipolo Polo and former national coach of Uganda Cranes. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa program. For more than 60 years, the Flying Disc Frisbee has provided enjoyment for people at parks, beaches, and picnics. But flinging a frisbee is much more than a recreational pursuit. It has inspired team sports. And according to VOA's Adam Phillips, Team Frisbee fans are lobbying for inclusion in a future Olympics. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Adam takes a look at Frisbee culture in New York.
It's the flying saucer that you command. Watch.
This is the way to curve a Frisbee.
This is the way to curve a Frisbee.
Catch a Frisbee.
That's a TV commercial from the early 1960s when Frisbees were relative newcomers and Americans were fascinated by flying saucers and all things space. At 74, Jerry Linus remembers those days well.
When I arrived in New York in 1965, it was popular, but only as a toy for children or as a device for the long-haired people, the counterculture. And I found myself magnetized, attracted to a group in Central Park who were addicted to the pleasure of just throwing and flowing. When you throw the thing, you feel like you're flying. It kind of carries you with it, like a spaceship or a flying saucer. I'm in love with these things.
Linus's apartment is crammed with vintage discs, Frisbee competition posters, and other memorabilia, and his own clay sculptures of Frisbee players. For Linus, flying discs are all about joy, passion, artfulness, and fun.
One of the things I find most amusing is the old saying that when a ball sleeps, it dreams it's a disc. Balls just go up and down, but discs not only can fly, but they can do unusual things like fly in a curve or fly under the boughs of a tree.
Frisbees, or discs, I'm using the terms interchangeably, have inspired hugely popular team sports.
The two most popular internationally are disc golf, which is like ball golf, except that you throw the disc into baskets. And the other is a team sport called ultimate, which is very much like soccer or football.
Thousands of American high schools and universities have ultimate leagues, and the game is poised to become an Olympic sport. Let's listen in on a goal made during a recent professional match between the New York Empire and Philadelphia Phoenix teams.
Hell yeah, Ian Garin!
Jerry Linus prefers one of the many two, three, or four-player games he invented himself over the decades.
One is called Splitso, where you throw two discs. The smaller one is inside of the larger one, and you throw them at your opponent, and they split up at the last moment, and your opponent is required to catch one in each hand. And I do something called skyscraping, where I go down to the Wall Street area, and I play to an unseen partner who's a block and a half away, and the object of the game is to touch as many buildings in one throw as possible. Three buildings is hard, but I've done it.
Today, freestyle is a highly inventive part of disc culture that combines performance with athleticism. Usually done solo or in pairs, freestylers give the disc a strong spin, then keep it spinning through all kinds of graceful, often acrobatic maneuvers. Brad Keller is a world-class freestyler and co-director of the 2016 Freestyle Frisbee World Championships, which will be held this year in Brooklyn, New York. Keller has been part of the freestyle scene in Central Park's Sheep Meadow, the birthplace of the art form, since the 1970s.
We're judged by three judges in each of three categories, which are execution, presentation, and difficulty. We throw the disc back and forth, and we spin it on our fingertips, similarly to what people do with a basketball. We use the rim to do different kinds of pullouts and pushes. We do tips. We work with it right side up or upside down. We can airbrush it where we side slap the disc into the wind, and it moves forward, and then the wind pushes it back, where we can then either slap it again or brush it, as we call it. Or we can roll it across our chest or across our back. So there are all these different types of manipulations we do that incorporate the disc into, in essence, a dance performance.
So that was a move where I threw it up vertically with a lot of spin, and I took it in what's called a rim delay, where the frisbee is actually sort of parallel to me.
In addition to being a full-time law student, James Wiseman is a two-time world frisbee freestyle champion. He's often seen practicing for hours in Sheep Meadow, which is still ground zero for disc arts and athletics in the Big Apple.
There's always new things to do and new things to try and new things to experiment with. That's something that's really special because it never gets old, and there's always something on the horizon that you're trying to figure out.
So it's a character builder too, huh?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, freestyle is teaching me a lot about patience and determination and different ways of thinking. And you know, it's sort of like a drug because it doesn't always happen, and you're always chasing the harder version of the same move, the harder combo, just more, more, more. You know, it has so much to offer.
Serendipity is a key part of what disc play has to offer.
Frisbee's the game I keep away.
For the sunny side of sports, this is VOA's Adam Phillips reporting in New York.
Thanks, Adam. I really feel like flinging a frisbee right now. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with a report on how two world-class female athletes are preparing for next year's Tokyo Olympics amid the coronavirus pandemic. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Last month, IOC President Thomas Bach told BBC Sport he fully accepts that if next year's Tokyo Games are still affected by the coronavirus outbreak, they will not take place. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has also made it clear that if the Games are delayed beyond next summer, there is no plan B. Their comments echo those of Tokyo 2020 President Yoshiro Mori, who told reporters in April, if the Olympics are unable to open on the rescheduled date, the Games will be completely scrapped. However, Mori expressed confidence that the one-year delay ensures the Games will go on as planned. But Olympian and British sprinter Desiree Henry recently told Reuters News that she plans to prioritize her health over competing next year if the pandemic has not been contained.
Throughout all of this, it's just made me realize that we are more than just athletes and performers that want to entertain people in a crowd. We're humans that have families and lives to think of. And so from the health aspect, you have to put your health first. I want to live. I want all the other athletes to live and be healthy. And so if the pandemic hasn't been, you know, sorted by 2021, I would have to put my health first. Honestly, I have a family to come back to. So I think I would personally take a step back because I'm not trying to say I'm going to die for the sport, because I'm not going to do that. I really do care about my own health and my family. And I would honestly encourage others to think outside of being an athlete and just remember that you're an individual where people and family love you.
In 2016, Desiree won bronze for Great Britain in the 4x100-meter relay at the Rio Games. But she says her goal to medal again has been made tougher with the uncertainty that surrounds the upcoming Games in Tokyo.
I think that's the hardest thing, not knowing how things are going to go towards the future. So for someone like me, it just means that I have to continue training as if there is going to be a competition later on this year. Yes, it's very, very hard to mentally kind of train towards a goal that obviously has been taken away, such as the Olympics, but there are meant to be smaller competitions throughout the year, so I just have to really stay focused and keep training towards those.
Gyms and training centers remain closed due to an enforced lockdown in the UK, so Desiree is making use of local parks and fields for running sessions. And the 24-year-old says with youth on her side, she's not concerned the postponement will prevent her from reaching her full potential. But her heart goes out to the athletes who now have to delay their own retirement.
I think during this time, it's probably the hardest for athletes that are either looking to retire, looking to start a family, and their sights were set on making the Olympics one more time as the largest pinnacle of our sport. That must be kind of a hard moment where you have to really change everything in your life. But I guess for somebody like me, I just think that I am young. I kind of do have age on my side. So I'm not thinking of anything too far ahead in terms of, oh, I can never reach my potential. I'm just like, this has just been delayed more than anything, and there's still an opportunity, there's still a chance, but mentally, I just feel like you have to stay strong more than ever during this time.
Across the pond, Australian javelin thrower Kelsey Lee Barber is also coming to terms with how to prepare for the upcoming Games. The South African-born world champion told Reuters that under normal circumstances, she and her husband would be headed to her training base in Italy. But flight restrictions have made that impossible.
We'd normally be planning to head overseas very shortly and base ourselves normally at the European Training Center in Italy for three and a half months while we travel and compete, and then would have gone into our major championship. So in terms of the year, things look very different, and even day to day we are now sort of going with the flow, I guess, trying to manage what we can.
In the era of social distancing, it helps that her husband is also her coach. But Mike Barber admits training in isolation has made it harder to keep home life separate from work.
Oh, look, I think from the start, we've been pretty clear on trying not to bring work home. And obviously, at the moment, we're kind of forced to. And so I think, again, we're just trying to stick to what we've always done in terms of when it's training time, we're all in and we're professional about what we do, and when it's time to switch off.
But when that switch turns on, Kelsey trains hard in her garage-turned-personal gym and at a nearby park. And she says strict preventative guidelines have not deterred her quest to win Olympic gold.
We're taking very good care of how we're operating in our day-to-day life. So I'm feeling very confident that, no, I'm not too afraid of actually getting the virus. And secondly, no, I don't think it's changed my desire for Olympic gold at all. I know it's changed the timeline and the date for that.
Next year's Tokyo Games are set for July 23rd through August 8th. And Tokyo 2020 President Yoshiro Mori has suggested the Olympics and Paralympics might share opening and closing ceremonies instead of holding them separately as traditionally done in the past. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the June 3rd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.